Chapter 104. The Cathay. After Falorian helped me discover what I was capable of, I took a more active hand in the creation of my shade. Falorian seemed pleased at my progress, but I was frustrated. There were no rules to follow, no facts to remember. Because of this, my quick wit and trooper's memory were of little use to me, and my progress seemed irritatingly slow. Eventually, I could touch my shade without fear of damaging it and change its shape according to my desire. With some practice, I could turn it from a short cape to a full hooded morning cloak or anything in between. Still, it would be unfair for me to take even a hair of the credit for its creation. Falorian was the one who gathered the shadow, wove it with moon and fire and daylight. My major contribution was the suggestion that it should have numerous little pockets. After we took the shade all the way into daylight, I thought our work was done. My suspicions seemed confirmed when we spent a long stretch of time swimming, singing, and otherwise enjoying each other's company. But Falorian avoided the topic of the shade whenever I brought it up. I didn't mind, as her evasions on the subject were always delightful. Because of this, I had the impression some part of it was left unfinished. One morning, we awoke in an embrace, spent perhaps an hour kissing to arouse our appetites, then fell to our breakfast of fruit and fine white bread with honeycomb and olives. Then Falorian grew serious and asked me for a piece of iron. Her request surprised me. Some time ago I had thought to resume a few of my mundane habits. Using the surface of the pool as a mirror, I used my small razor to shave. At first, Falorian had seemed pleased by my smooth cheeks and chin. But when I moved to kiss her, she pushed me to arm's length, snorting as if to clear her nose. She told me I reeked of iron and sent me into the forest, telling me not to return until I got the bitter stink of it from my face. So it was with no small amount of curiosity that I dug a piece of broken iron buckle out of my travel sack. I held it out to her nervously, the way you might hand a child a sharp knife. "Why do you need it?" I asked, trying to appear unconcerned. Falorian said nothing. She held it tightly between her thumb and two forefingers, as if it were a snake struggling to twist around and bite her. Her mouth made a thin line, and her eyes began to brighten from their customary twilight purple to a deep water blue. "Can I help?" I asked. She laughed, not the light chiming laugh I had heard so often, but a wild, fierce laugh. "Do you want to help truly?" she asked. The hand holding the shard of iron trembled slightly. I nodded, a little frightened. "Then go." Her eyes were still changing, brightening to a bluish white. "I do not need flame now, or songs, or questions." When I didn't move, she made a shooing motion. "Go to the forest. Do not wander far, but do not trouble me for the time it takes to love four times." Her voice had changed slightly, too. Though still soft, it had taken on a brittle edge that alarmed me. I was about to protest when she gave me a terrible look that sent me scampering mindlessly for the trees. I wandered aimlessly for a while, trying to regain my composure. This was difficult, as I was baby naked and had been shooed away from the presence of serious magic the way a mother sends a bothersome child away from the cook fire. Still, I knew I wouldn't be welcome back in the clearing for some time, so I pointed my face dayward and set off to explore. I can't say why I wandered so far afield that day. Falorian had warned me to stay close, and I knew it to be good advice. Any of 100 stories from my childhood told me the danger of wandering in the Fae. Even discounting them, the stories Falorian herself had told should have been enough to keep me close to the safety of her twilight grove. My natural curiosity must take some of the blame, I suppose, but most of it belongs to my bruised pride. Pride and folly, they go together like two tightly grasping hands. I walked for the better part of an hour as the sky above me slowly brightened into full daylight. I found a path of sorts, but saw nothing living aside from the occasional butterfly or leaping squirrel. With every step I took, my mood teetered between boredom and anxiety. I was in the Fae, after all. I should be seeing marvelous things, Castles of glass, burning fountains, bloodthirsty trow, barefoot old men eager to give me advice. The trees gave way to a great grassy plain. All the parts of the Fae Falurian had shown me had been forested, so this seemed a clear sign I was well outside the bounds of where I ought to be. Still, I continued, enjoying the feel of sunlight on my skin after so long in the dim twilight of Falurian's glade. The trail I followed seemed to be leading to a lone tree standing in the grassy field. I decided I would go as far as that tree, then head back. However, after walking for a long while, I didn't seem to be coming much closer to the tree. At first, I thought this was another oddity of the Fae, but as I continued to make my stubborn way along the path, the truth became clear. The tree was simply larger than I had thought, much larger and much farther away. The path did not ultimately lead to the tree. In fact, it curved away from it, avoiding it by more than half a mile. I was considering turning back when a bright flutter of color under the tree's canopy caught my eye. After a brief struggle, my curiosity won out, and I stepped off the path into the long grass. It was no type of tree I had ever seen before, and I approached it slowly. It resembled a vast spreading willow, with broader leaves of a darker green. The tree had deep, hanging foliage scattered with pale, powder-blue blossoms. The wind shifted, and as the leaves stirred, I smelled a strange, sweet smell. It was like smoke and spice and leather and lemon. It was a compelling smell, not in the same way that food smells appealing. It didn't make my mouth water or my stomach growl. Despite this, if I'd seen something sitting on a table that smelled this way, even if it were a lump of stone or a piece of wood, I would have felt compelled to put it in my mouth. Not out of hunger, but from sheer curiosity, much like a child might. As I stepped closer, I was struck with the beauty of the scene. The deep green of the leaves contrasted with the butterflies flitting from branch to branch, sipping from the pale blossoms of the tree. What I had taken at first to be a bed of flowers beneath the tree turned out to be a carpet of butterflies almost completely covering the ground. The scene was so breathtaking, I stopped several dozen feet away from the tree's canopy, not wanting to startle them into flight. Many of the butterflies flitting among the flowers were purple and black, or blue and black, like those in Falurian's clearing. Others were a solid, vibrant green, or gray and yellow, or silver and blue. But my eye was caught by a single large red one, crimson shot through with a faint tracery of metallic gold. Its wings were bigger than my spread hand, and as I watched, it fluttered deeper into the foliage in search of a fresh flower to light upon. Suddenly, its wings were no longer moving in concert. They tumbled apart and fluttered separately to the ground like falling autumn leaves. It was only after my eyes followed them to the base of the tree that I saw the truth. The ground below was not a resting place for butterflies. It was strewn with lifeless wings. Thousands of them littered the grass beneath the tree's canopy like a blanket of gemstones.
"The red ones offend my aesthetic," claimed a cool, dry voice from the tree.
I took a step back, trying to peer through the thick canopy of hanging leaves.
"What manners," chided the dry voice. "No introduction. Staring?"
"My apologies, sir," I said earnestly. Then, remembering the tree's flowers, I amended, "Ma'am, but I have never spoken with a tree before, and find myself at something of a loss."
"I dare say you are. I am no tree. No more than is a man a chair. I am the Cathay. You're fortunate to find me. Many would envy your chance."
"Chance?" I echoed, trying to catch a glimpse of whatever was speaking to me from among the branches of the tree. A piece of an old story tickled my memory. Some scrap of folklore I'd read while searching for the Chandrian.
"You're an oracle," I said. "Oracle? How quaint. Do not try to pin me with small names. I am Cathay. I am. I see.
I know.
Two iridescent blue-black wings fluttered separately where there had been a butterfly before.
At times, I speak.
I thought the red ones offended you.
There are no red ones left.
The voice was nonchalant.
And the blue ones are ever so slightly sweet.
I saw a flicker of movement, and another pair of sapphire wings began spinning slowly to the ground.
You're Felurian's new manling, aren't you?
I hesitated, but the dry voice continued as if I'd answered.
I thought as much. I can smell the iron on you.
Just a hint.
Still, one has to wonder how she stands it.
A pause. A blur. A slight disturbance of a dozen leaves. Two more wings twitched, then fluttered downward.
Come now,
the voice continued, now coming from a different part of the tree, though still hidden by the hanging leaves.
Surely a curious boy is bound to have a question or two. Come, ask. Your silence much offends me.
I hesitated, then said, I suppose I might have a question or two.
Ah.
The sound was slow and satisfied.
I thought you might.
What can you tell me of the Aemir?
Kikes!
The Cathay spat an irritated noise.
What is this? Why so guarded? Why the games? Ask me of the Chandrian and have done.
I stood, stunned and silent.
Surprised? Why should you be? Goodness, boy, you're like a clear pool. I can see 10 feet through you, and you're barely 3 feet deep.
There was another blur of motion, and two pairs of wings went spinning to the ground, one blue, one purple. I thought I saw a sinuous motion among the branches, but it was hidden by the endless, wind-brushed swaying of the tree.
Why the purple one? I asked, simply to have something to say.
Pure spite, the Cathay said. I envied its innocence, its lack of care. Besides, too much sweetness cloys me, as does willful ignorance.
A pause.
You wish to ask me of the Chandrian, do you not?
I could do nothing but nod.
Not much to say, really,
the Cathay remarked flippantly.
You would do better to call them the Seven, though. Chandrian has so much folklore hanging off it after all these years. The names used to be interchangeable, but nowadays if you say Chandrian, people think of ogres and rendlings and Skaven. Such silliness.
There was a long pause. I stood motionless until I realized the creature was waiting for a response.
Tell me more,
I said. My voice sounded terribly thin to my own ears.
Why?
I thought I detected a playful note in the voice.
Because I need to know,
I said, trying to force some strength back into my voice.
Need?
Cathay asked skeptically.
Why this sudden need? The masters at the university might know the answers you're looking for, but they wouldn't tell you even if you did ask, which you won't. You're too proud for that. Too clever to ask for help. Too mindful of your reputation.
I tried to speak, but my throat did nothing but make a dry clicking sound. I swallowed and tried again.
Please,
I need to know. They killed my parents.
Are you going to try to kill the Chandrian?
The voice sounded fascinated, almost taken aback.
Track and kill them all yourself. My word, how will you manage it? Haliax has been alive 5,000 years. 5,000 years and not 1 second sleep. Clever to go looking for the Aemir, I suppose. Even one proud as you can recognize the need for help. The Order might give it to you, Trouble is, they're as hard to find as the seven themselves. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Whatever is a brave young boy to do?
Tell me. I meant to shout it, but it came out pleading.
It would be frustrating, I suppose, the cafe continued calmly. The few people who believe in the Chandrian are too afraid to talk, and everyone else will just laugh at you for asking.
There was a dramatic sigh that seemed to come from several places in the foliage at once.
That's the price you pay for civilization, though.
What price? I asked.
Arrogance, the cafe said. You assume you know everything. You laughed at fairies until you saw one. Small wonder all your civilized neighbors dismiss the Chandrian as well. You'd have to leave your precious corners far behind before you found someone who might take you seriously. You wouldn't have a hope until you made it to the storm wall.
There was a pause. Then another pair of purple wings went drifting to the ground. I swallowed against the dryness in my throat, trying to think of what question I could ask to get more information.
Not many folk will take your search for the Emir seriously, you realize,
the cafe continued calmly.
The mayor, however, is quite the extraordinary man. He's already come close to them, though he doesn't realize it. Stick by the mayor, and he will lead you to their door.
The cafe gave a thin, dry chuckle.
Blood, bracken, and bone, I wish you creatures had the wit to appreciate me. Whatever else you might forget, remember what I just said. Eventually, you'll get the joke. I guarantee. You'll laugh when the time comes.
What can you tell me about the Chandrian? I asked.
Since you ask so sweetly, Cinder is the one you want. Remember him? White hair, dark eyes. Did things to your mother, you know. Terrible. She held up well, though. Lorien was always a trooper, if you'll pardon the expression. Much better than your father, with all his begging and blubbering.
My mind flashed pictures of things I had tried to forget for years. My mother, her hair wet with blood, her arms unnaturally twisted, broken at the wrist, the elbow. My father, his belly cut open, had left a trail of blood for 20 feet. He'd crawled to be closer to her. I tried to speak, but my mouth was dry.
Why?
I managed to croak.
Why? The cafe echoed. What a good question. I know so many whys. Why do they do such nasty things to your poor family? Why? Because they wanted to, and because they could, and because they had a reason. Why do they leave you alive? Why? Because they were sloppy, and because you were lucky, and because something scared them away.
What scared them away? I thought numbly. But it was all too much. The memories. The things the voice said. My mouth worked silently, questioning.
What? The cafe asked. Are you looking for a different why? Are you wondering why I tell you these things? What good comes of it? Maybe this Cinder did me a bad turn once. Maybe it amuses me to set a young pup like you snapping at his heels. Maybe the soft creaking of your tendons as you clench your fists is like a sweet symphony to me. Oh, yes, it is. And you can be sure. Why can't you find this Cinder? Well, that's an interesting why. You'd think a man with coal-black eyes would make an impression when he stops to buy a drink. How can it be that you haven't managed to catch wind of him in all this time?
I shook my head, trying to clear it of the smell of blood and burning hair. The cafe seemed to take it as a signal.
That's right. I suppose you don't need me to tell you what he looks like. You've seen him just a day or three ago.
realization thundered into me. The leader of the bandits. The graceful man in chainmail. Cinder. He was the one who had spoken to me when I was a child. The man with the terrible smile and the sword like winter ice.
"Pity he got away," the Cathay continued. "Still, you must admit you've had quite a piece of luck. I'd say it was a twice-in-a-lifetime opportunity meeting up with him again. Pity you wasted it. Don't feel bad you didn't recognize him. They have a lot of experience hiding those telltale signs. Not your fault at all. It's been a long time. Years. Besides, you've been busy, currying favor, rolling around in the cushions with some pixie sating your base desires."
Three green butterflies twitched all at once. Their wings looked like leaves as they spun to the ground.
"Speaking of desires, what would your Denna think? My, my. Imagine her seeing you here. You and the pixie all tangled up, at it like rabbits.
He beats her, you know. Her patron.
Not all the time, but often. Sometimes in a temper, but mostly it's a game to him. How far can he go before she cries? How far can he push before she tries to leave and he has to lure her back again? It's nothing grotesque, mind you. No burns. Nothing that will leave a scar. Not yet. 2 days ago he used his walking stick. That was new. Welts the size of your thumb under her clothes. Bruises down to the bone. She's trembling on the floor with blood in her mouth, and you know what she thinks before the black? You. She thinks of you.
You thought of her too, I'm guessing.
In between the swimming and strawberries and the rest.
The Cathay made a sound like a sigh.
Poor girl. She's tied to him so tight. Thinks that's all she's good for. Wouldn't leave him even if you asked. Which you won't. You, so careful. So scared of startling her away, and well you should be, too. She's a runner, that one. Now that she's left Severin, how can you hope to find her?
It's a shame you left without a word, you know. She was just beginning to trust you before that, before you got angry.
Before you ran off. Just like every other man in her life, just like every other man. Lusting after her, full of sweet words, then just walking away, leaving her alone. Good thing she's used to it by now, isn't it? Otherwise you might have hurt her. Otherwise you just might have broken that poor girl's heart.
It was all too much. I turned and ran, pelting madly back the way I had come, back to the quiet twilight of Felurian's clearing, away, away, away. And as I ran, I could hear Cathay speaking behind me. Its dry, quiet voice followed me longer than I would have thought possible.
Come back! Come back! I've more to say. I've so much more to tell you. Won't you stay?
It was hours before I came back to Felurian's clearing. I'm not sure how I found my way. I only remember being surprised at the sight of her pavilion through the trees. The sight of it slowed the mad spinning of my thoughts until I could begin to think again. I went to the pool and took a long, deep drink, splashing water on my face to clear my head and hide the signs of tears. After a moment or two of quiet reflection, I stood and walked to the pavilion. It was only then that I noticed a curious lack of butterflies. There were usually at least a handful flitting around, but now there were none. Felurian was there, but the sight of her only unsettled me further. It was the only time I had ever seen her look less than perfectly beautiful. She lay among the cushions, drawn and weary, as if I had been gone for days instead of hours, and she had not eaten or slept all the while. She lifted her head tiredly when she heard me approach.
"It is done,"
she said, but when she looked at me, her eyes widened with surprise. I looked down and saw that I was bramble-torn and bloody. I was spattered with mud and grass-stained along my entire left side. I must have fallen during my mindless flight away from the cafe. Florian sat upright.
"What has come of you?"
I brushed absently at a bit of dried blood on my elbow. "I might ask the same of you." My voice sounded thick and coarse, as if I'd been shouting. When I looked up, I saw real concern in her eyes. "I went walking dayward. I found something in a tree. It called itself a cafe." Valorian went motionless when I spoke its name.
"The cafe? Did you speak?"
I nodded.
"Did you ask of it?"
But before I could answer, she gave a quiet, despairing cry and rushed to me. She began to run her hands over my body as if searching for wounds. After a minute of this, she took my face in her hands and looked into my eyes as if frightened of what she might find there.
"Are you well?"
Her concern brought a faint smile to my lips. I began to assure her that I was fine. Then I remembered the things the cafe had said. I remembered the fires and the man with ink-black eyes. I thought of Denna sprawled on the floor with a mouthful of blood. Tears came to my eyes, and I choked. I turned away and shook my head, eyes clenched shut and unable to speak. She stroked the back of my neck and said,
"All is well. The hurt will go. It has not bit you, and your eyes are clear, so all is well."
I pulled away from her enough to look her in the face.
"My eyes?" "The things the cafe says can leave men broken in their heads, but I would see it if it were so. You are still my Kvothe, still my sweet poet."
She leaned forward, oddly hesitant, then gave me a gentle kiss on my forehead.
"It lies to men and drives them mad?"
She shook her head slowly.
"The cafe does not lie. It has the gift of seeing, but it only tells things to hurt men. Only a Dennerling would speak to the cafe."
She touched the side of my neck to soften her words. I nodded, knowing it to be the truth, and I began to cry.